up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... So, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Now, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
The f*** you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Hello and welcome to Sacks and Jacks. I'm Tim Howell. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 13. NASDAQ Futures up 83. We were struggling a little yesterday, but we're still up. Of course, that means we got to go up today because we have to go up. There's no way we're not going up to the election. It appears we're going to put money into the system until we drop. And that's, you know, and we're going to confuse that with great investing. But the fact is, we definitely want to be long, at least up until now. And we'll see how long that goes. We have Professor Carl.
You do.
How are you, bud?
Well, you know, I'm okay. I just look at all the different elements of stupidity that are going on right now. Let's spend, 30 seconds on two of them, both related to the same thing. All the screaming about climate, right? We're monsters. We hate the world. We certainly hate the natural world. We hate animals.
Well, we are arrogant because we actually think we can change the climate.
Well, yes. Well, I was going to get to that.
Yeah.
Okay. We hate this. The whole reason, you know, we're poisoning the earth on purpose so that we can have cars and electricity and flush toilets and all this other stuff. That's the reason we're doing it. It's not because cold has always killed more people than heat. And oh, by the way, how many people lived in Florida before there was air conditioning?
Not very many.
Not very many, right? So, you know, but we're having more and more severe hurricanes. Never mind that the absolute worst of them, that we have records for anyway, happened before there were very many people in Florida. And if that same storm was to come in... Well, actually, there were two of them, the Okeechobee and Labor Day hurricane. They didn't have names back then. They just kind of marked them by when they happened on the calendar.
The Galveston one was Isaac's storm, right?
Right. And if that storm, any of those storms had happened today, the damage would be in the tens or maybe even hundreds of billions of dollars, simply because there was nobody there. And for all intents and purposes, destroyed everything that was there. Of course, today everybody's there, right? So I mean, you know, it's not the storm that got worse; it's that the people got in the way of it. But the other curious claim, you're old enough, you remember this. Most all the younger people don't, because they weren't alive yet. Time magazine, the 1970s, scared the living blankety blank out of me, along with a bunch of other scientists in this same line of work. And the reason they did is that, and it actually got into my little pea brain at the time, was that they predicted that we were going into a new ice age. And we were all going to freeze to death. Now, that one you can't do anything about. You know, I mean, if a glacier covers your house...
Actually, I recall... something along those lines, because I was upright and taking nourishment back then, about how many atomic
hydrogen bombs we would have to drop on the increasing ice to stop it.
Which by the way was you want to talk about something that's ludicrous. Now there is something that's ludicrous. Yeah. Okay. So the amusing part about all this is that, of course, that didn't happen, right? That was a prediction that didn't happen. But one of the breathless predictions back in the start of the yelling about this so-called human-caused climate change was that the Maldives, among many other tropical islands, were going to cease to exist within 20 years. And it was because the sea was rising and they were literally going to be flooded and be gone. A funny thing happened on the way to the ball. The Maldives have actually gained land area over the last 25 years.
Well, there's two things
there's another piece to this. Yeah. Okay. Not only did they gain land area.
Well, New York is not underwater either.
Well, that's right. By the way, the news is Miami, which that one's a little more surprising because Miami actually is built on a landfill and it's sinking. The water's not going up, the land's going down. It was built on a swamp. New Orleans is subsiding as well. Okay. But the amusing part of this is that there was an article in the New York Times a couple of days ago, and it says, well, in places where the sea level is going up, somebody has never actually looked at the globe. Okay, I mean, we have satellites now, so we can actually look at the whole thing, right? In the 1500s, we didn't. And has never noticed that all of those oceans are all connected together?
They sort of are. They sure are.
They are, aren't they? Yeah. And if you take two buckets, and you can do this experiment yourself, if you think I'm crazy, if you take two buckets and you put a pipe fitting in the bottom of each one, and you take a piece of hose and hook the two of them together, and you put water in one bucket, no matter how much water you put in one bucket, you wait a little while, the exact same level of water is in both. And it doesn't matter how many of them you connect together like this, the water level ends up as exactly the same in all of them. So the water is not going up, the land is going down. Okay, well, we're obviously not making the land go down. Okay, but building on top of unstable surfaces, that tends to be kind of a
actually in the New Orleans area, I think that there is some thought that they pulled an awful lot of South New Orleans, and they had those barrier islands. Wasn't there a lot of oil there?
Well, yeah, I mean,
if you pull oil out, you might cause something to recede faster down because you pull the stuff that was underneath of it out.
Well, you might, yeah. I mean, that's not a crazy thought, right? Is that that might in fact be the case. Of course, in Florida forever, which is one of the funny things. I lived there for quite a long time. In large parts of the state, the surface land is actually sitting on top of limestone deposits. It's not that far down either, and some of those are full of water, and this makes for really cool places to go dive. You have to have your act together because obviously if you screw up, you're dead. You can only get back out the same way you went in, and because there's rock over your head for 100 feet if you're wrong.
No thanks.
Well, that yeah, but as part of that natural process, it's been going on forever. One of them is called Jackson Blue. I used to dive in it on a fairly decent basis. It's one of the prettier underwater cave systems. It kills more than a few people over the years, too, by being dumb. And you go quite a ways back in on this thing. And anybody that's dove it somewhat extensively has seen it. You got to be pretty good, though, because it's quite a ways in. There's actually a stoplight down there in the cave. a real no BS stoplight. And the reason the stoplight is there, no, somebody didn't stick flotation bags on it, drag it, you know, 2,500 feet back into the... That's not what happened. There was a sinkhole that opened up on top at some point in the past in some farmer's field. He got pissed off and tried to fill it in, and one of the things he threw in there to fill it in was a stoplight.
Well, didn't the one guy in Florida was in his bedroom and he's just gone? They couldn't find him?
Well, yeah, I mean, but this has been happening. This is what happens because, you know, the water erodes the limestone, right? That's why the cave's there in the first place. And sometimes it erodes it in ways that make the ground up above unstable and it collapses. So, and we didn't have anything to do with that. Now, of course, we can make it worse by taking water out at too great a rate, right?
Well, yeah, the two things about the global warming piece. No, and I'm not going to sit there and go whose fault, whatever. One of my buddies, good friend, graduated with a dude so a long time ago, and he worked for NOAA his whole life. Did mention that the amount of carbon dioxide we put in the air and land can pretty much be fought by just planting more trees because new growth eats up carbon dioxide and creates oxygen. I mean, everybody should know that.
Right.
He said, but the weird part is the oceans have a real problem with it. If you up the carbon dioxide even a little bit, it's not like the oceans can grow a whole bunch of stuff. They seem to have a problem with it, the ecosystem.
Well, there's so you got to be a little careful there. It's true to some extent. However, the oceans, so in chemistry, there's a thing called a buffering reaction. And the buffering reaction is simply one that goes both directions depending on the external conditions, usually temperature, but not necessarily. The oceans have an utterly enormous, far, far more than is in the atmosphere, carbon dioxide sequestered in a buffering reaction called carbonate. Okay, so that's what's made. And as the name implies, it's full of carbon, right? Nobody has managed to come up with the buffering reaction for ocean held carbonate with the energy terms. In other words, what causes it to go one way versus the other? Okay, nobody knows what it is. And yet, that is absolutely that's essential to life on Earth. Without it, there would be a runaway one direction or the other. And if the carbon dioxide level goes too low, plant life ceases and everything dies. So, obviously, you know, that has not happened because we're all here.
Right.
All right. But without understanding that reaction, you have absolutely no clue how this system actually works, because the majority of the area of the Earth is covered by oceans, and the amount of carbon dioxide that's sequestered in carbonate in those oceans is many times the amount of carbon dioxide that's in the air. So the driver of the balance is there, obviously, okay? But nobody knows what that is. And there has, now to be fair, people have been trying to figure it out, okay? But you ask one of these so-called client scientists, what, you know, give me the buffering reaction with the energy.
Oh, he was more of an observer. He was a guy who did the ozone overflies and those kinds of things. I mean, I don't know the answers were part of the, they're just trying to get the observations first.
Well, yeah, but, you know, but they don't have nobody has that answer, right? And yet it is the key answer as to whether or not there is the potential for a runaway, or is this a self-balancing system and it runs in cycles? No, nobody knows. And then the other thing that's interesting about all of this is that it wasn't all that long ago that we were told the Great Barrier Reef was going to be coral-less. It was dying.
Well, I think,
By the way, it's not. It's healthier now than it's ever been.
Well, there's a lot of, you know, crazy stuff out there, and it doesn't happen. But I think there is some truth to a couple things. One is that because we have so many people in the world, and I'm not saying tell people to stop making people, but some people are, a real lot of people are living in areas that are kind of right on the edge. Hence the Death Valley.
I mean, you know. But
Fari was, you know, Fari knew his stuff when it came to this stuff. He grew up over in that area of the world. And he was saying, if it's 121 in the desert, people don't like it, but they survive. And if it's 130, camels don't live, the bugs don't live. I mean, you're sort of on the edge. I mean, if all of a sudden those areas jumped up 5 degrees, you'd have a lot of people wanting to be somewhere else.
Well, yeah, but you know, here's the thing that goes with that, Chief, is that we don't, you know, in the modern era, we have pretty accurate capacity to see what's going on because we have these satellites up in this, you know, up in space, right? Prior to that era, the only way that we knew there was a hurricane, for example, is when some poor SOB managed to skirt it in a ship and survived. And most of the time, if you were crazy enough, you know, if you got caught in one of those things, you didn't. Your ship got sunk.
Well, according to the book Isaac's Storm, the people that had tremendous, I don't know, verbal or whatever records going back were people from Cuba.
Right.
Because they charted them all, you know, within 300 or 400 miles of their shore, maybe 200, which is where they at least observed most of them coming through there, right? They had a pretty good idea what, you know, what to look out for and those kinds of things.
Right.
So they, you know, they were pretty good at it. But even though, you're right, they didn't have satellites. Hey, I wanted to talk about introducing, going page two here. I know I set that stuff around with the. I was very concerned this weekend. Well, my concern doesn't do anybody any good. This whole idea of one of the right wing talking points now, which I've heard now from three or four of my right wing people that are close to me, and then I had to listen to Lindsey Graham.
Oh my God!
First thing out of his mouth was this thing about we were energy independent under Trump, and Biden has screwed all that up. And I, first of all, we're doing 2.1 million more barrels a day under Biden than when Trump got out. Now Trump raised the 2.7 million as well. Okay.
Right.
So I don't know if either one of them was necessarily favorable to an industry or whether the technology and the fracking is now to the point where your break even is down to what, 40 or 45 when it used to be 70? So there's a lot, but it's interesting how the talking points, and we're also talking, if you listen to Lindsey Graham, basically not only, well, this may be a little exaggeration, was there were no illegal aliens, but they're immigrants, but they were so afraid of Trump they like ran back home or something. But there's a interesting, we talk about people that are monsters, and I'm not saying those guys are, but some people are pretty darn bright, even though they are not so good of people. I'm reading here from a translation of Mein Kampf, of all things, Adolf Hitler, and he's talking about the big lie. And I'll tell you what, I don't know when I've ever read two paragraphs more descriptive of something in my life than this, because he was convinced that the Jewish people blame the army for the loss of World War One, and that was an absolutely a big lie, that it wasn't the army, it was the people supporting the army, whatever. So these two paragraphs, take me a second to read them, but Carlos, I don't know if you ever read this, you probably have, but this is unbelievable. All this was inspired by the principle, which is quite true within itself, that in the big lie, there is always a certain force of credibility, because the broad masses of a nation are always more easily corrupted in the deeper strata of their emotional nature than consciously or voluntarily. And thus, in the primitive simplicity of their minds, they more readily fall victims to the big lie than the small lie, since they themselves often tell small lies in little matters, but would be ashamed to resort to large-scale falsehoods. It would never come into their heads to fabricate colossal untruths, and they would not believe others to have the impudence to distort the truth so infamously. Even though the facts which prove this to be so may be brought clear to their minds, they will still doubt and waver and will continue to think there must be some other explanation. For the grossly impudent, the lie always leaves traces behind it, even after it has been nailed down, a fact that is known to all expert liars in the world and to all who conspire together in the art of lying. Is that unbelievable, those two paragraphs?
Yeah, it's true.
Yep.
Chief, look at what's going on right now in the political sphere, right?
Because that's what I'm talking about.
You know, we're a few months away from, you know, from an election, right? And of course, the breathless commentators are out again. Right now, this is, you know, this is a 20-year history. You know, this is the most important election in our lifetime. If you do not do the right thing, we are doomed. we are all going to die. And by God, somebody, you know, Putin's going to nuke us. There's always a boogeyman somewhere, right? Well, we have a little potato, allegedly running the country right now. And no matter what you think of Joe Biden as a person, it is quite clear that cognitively he's not there 90% of the time. Now, this is not, believe it or not, you know, this is not the first time this has happened. You know, how about Woodrow Wilson? Does anybody remember what happened with Wilson? I don't know that anybody does, but for all intents and purposes, his wife ran the country after he had a stroke in office. All right, so this, you know, it's not the first. How about the, you know, Reagan's second term and Nancy and, you know, I mean, who knows exactly how much of that's true, but boy, did the rumor mill swill around at the time. So this is not a brand new thing by any stretch of the imagination, but what I find fascinating is how many people are tying themselves in knots over the fact that they all saw it. Everyone in his cabinet, everyone in his administration, and the press, especially the press corps that travels with the president on a routine basis, right? And they do. There's a pool that it is, I mean, they, other than his wife, probably know him better than anybody simply because they see him literally every day. So they know what his condition is like. And nobody has said a word all the way from the campaign forward. Now, sadly, most people, if you're getting to be our age, we've had a relative or a friend who has done the slow burn cognitively as they got older. I had two grands that both had it happen to them. And, you know, slightly different presentations, but my grandfather, his body just refused to quit, but he had no idea who in the blankety blank I was, and I was a teenager at the time. It was very difficult for me to deal with. But most people have seen it. Everybody that was around him knew this was going on, and it's been going on for the entire time he's been in office. And they all hid it on purpose. So you talk about the big lie.
Well, I'm, and
you know what? And now people are, you know what people are screaming about now? That there is really nothing. You know, we have to stay with this because, with him. Excuse me, the Democrat Party is the one that short-circuited the primary system, okay? By the way, the Republicans would have done the same thing if it was Trump in office. Why? Because in the modern...
Well, they did anyway. They didn't want anybody running against him, really, this time.
Well, that's true. They did do it. But you know what, Chief? It's more than that. The party system that we have is set up in such a way, and always has been, by the way. This is not a brand new thing. That the president is the titular head of that political party, period. Okay? And by the way, you're not owed a fair contest in a primary. It's called legally, it's called a presidential preference primary. That's the legal name of it. You're expressing a preference.
Well, we're... I will say this. We have this... I've been talking about it. It doesn't make it correct. For a real long time, Carl, that we have a big split. You would probably use the word, some better than split. We have a big split between people's ability to gain the office, the skill set needed to gain the office, and the skill set needed for the rest of us to have a good president. They don't match up at all.
No.
And which is... pretty scary when you think about it. I mean, I don't see Abe Lincoln winning an election these days. I don't see it happen. I don't know that Roosevelt does either in a wheelchair. Yet I don't know what the country looks like without those two people. So the idea, I mean, you look in the mirror and you say, okay, how can you judge other people by yourself? Well, I'm not 35 anymore. I don't know that I could stand in the OEX pit for 6 hours. Shoving up against people, yelling and screaming, and doing all that stuff. Yet, I would say that if you want me to analyze your institutional portfolio or your portfolio and try and match it to what you should be doing in life, I'm way better at it now than I was then. And I would say that if...
Well, I would hope so.
But I would say that if you stuck me up on a stage, you know, quick wit and whatever, I probably was a hair quicker back then. And I certainly was better looking. Yet, I don't know that that's in what I do now for people, whether that makes any difference or not. I guess what I'm saying is, Biden always had issues. And I'm not defending the dude.
Well, sure he did.
He always had issues with language. He's kind of a stutterer. He's all those kinds of things. Now, the people who sit in front of him in the Oval Office, I don't know, he might seem as articulate as ever behind the desk, going through one thing at a time, having a chance to process it, and coming out with a decision. He might not show any. I think he probably does, to be honest with you. I'm sort of agreeing with you. But
well,
I don't know that.
Say,
I don't know that, and neither does that. But I'm saying there's a big difference between a clown stage next to a clown like this guy, debating back and forth your golf game, and actually being the president that the rest of us want. I'm not saying he is, by any stretch. I'm just trying to educate people, and there's quite a difference. One is an acting performance, and one is being able to process all the stuff that's going on and make a right decision when it comes to you. There's a big difference.
One of the points I tortured myself by watching that so-called debate, right? Which, you know, I mean, you got to be somewhat of a masochist to put up with that sort of thing for the length of time involved. There was some drinking involved with it as well.
There needs to be.
But I'm sitting there listening to, what I was looking for was, okay, first off, you know, everybody claimed that there was, you know, this cognitive thing. Okay, fine, let's see it. Here's supposedly, you know, a free-form, long-form thing. You can't do this for, you know, 5 minutes and then get up and walk off, right? That's not how it works in a situation like that. But one of the things that left me just slack-jawed was that Biden brought up 2 points. One of them had to do with the immigration situation, and the other one was economic. And in both cases, Trump had every opportunity, if he could think on his feet, to run him through with a sword and leave the pieces all over the lectern. Okay? I mean, it was the kind of thing that... I didn't think about this, you know, later on. This was extemporaneous while I'm sitting there watching this. I'm like, oh my God, he just killed himself on national television politically, all right? And nope, Trump goes off on this completely obtuse, unrelated rant.
He doesn't even
answer the damn question.
He's got his talking points. Well, I'm saying the best thing that happened to Trump was Biden was worse.
I know, but I'm sitting there going, then where my head goes, because I tend to think like this, is, you know, the place that my mind ends up is in the middle of this thing.
Hey, we got to dash off to Joel. We have to continue this on Friday, bud.
Either of these guys is in charge and the flag goes up, China nukes us.
Oh God. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 20. We have a real quick break because we ran over a little bit, so we have Joel on real quick.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here. Right now. Right here. Right now.
Low and Bikes, Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 70. We're going to spin quick here because we're a little over on Joel. European stocks a little bit lower. DAX down 87.5%. FTSE down 21.2%. CAC down 69.9%. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei up again, up 7.99. I saw another 2%, 41,580. Do you think, does anybody really think that the people, ask Joel, but the people in Japan are all that smart now? They have a bull market, or do you think the government's doing this? It's stunning what the currency moves can do to a stock market. It's not the brains in some of these things. Bonds, up 3 basis points, 4.30. We've got oil down 35 cents, 81.98, still lurking at the top of this end of the range. We've got gold, which was down yesterday, is up a little bit today, up 380, 23.67. Powell's talking today. We got inflation data coming out on Thursday. We've got Bitcoin, which has been going down. It's bouncing up today, up 1,100, 57,485. Ricardo, what do you got for us real quick? Traffic, weather, sports.
Absolutely, Chief. It's currently 6:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 72 degrees right now with a high of 87. Very pleasant. Intervals of clouds and sunshine with a thunderstorm in parts of the area. Not as warm, but humid. Tonight, a little rain from tropical rainstorm with a low of 67 degrees. Over to Phoenix, 92 degrees right now with a high of 116. Sunny and hot. The temperature tying the record from 1958. Danger of dehydration and heat stroke if you're outside for too long. Tonight is going to be partly cloudy and warm with a low of 88. On the traffic in Chicago, Iman Kennedy from Monroe's 19 minutes, Iman Edens from Lane Cook 37 minutes, Iman Eisenhower from Wolf 25 minutes, Iman Dan Ryan from 95th 18 minutes, and Stevenson from 24 to the Dan Ryan 22 minutes. Lastly, the MLB. Yesterday, the Twins beat the White Sox 86, the Braves beat the Diamondbacks 5-4, and today we got a couple games too. The Cubs play the Orioles in Maryland at 5:35. The White Sox play the Twins in Chicago at 7:10, and the Diamondbacks play the Braves in Arizona at 8:40 p.m. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Do we have Mr. Joel?
Yes, we do.
Joel, how are you, buddy?
Good morning, Chief. How you doing on this Tuesday morning?
I'm doing all right. The markets are still bumping along, records every day. Everybody's happy. Everybody wants in. Nobody wants out. What do you make of all this?
Relentless bull market is a way to put it. I mean, you do have some things that can shake up the market. You have the Powell testimony, but that seems to make the market go up. You have CPI data and PPI data that you mentioned also. Right now you're getting inflation to come down. There's still that aura that they're going to lower rates not once but twice this year. And heading into Q2 earnings season, Chief. So there's a lot of things on the table. The post-expiration turn, something that we talk about a lot. After the quad witch expiration in June, we've turned higher. So, Chief, what could go wrong?
I think the thing that could go wrong, and it's not going to happen today, not going to happen tomorrow, is I think the population, just reading an article here by Melissa Repko and Amelia Lucas regarding Walmart, Chipotle, and others are feeling the heat from skeptical customers. I think the population at large, which has no power to do anything about it, is starting to realize that these numbers are being fed on the inflation are all BS. And I think there's a grumbling. Of course, in our political system, it doesn't mean we'll get anybody new. I mean, Trump is not new, in my mind. Nothing's going to change, and the fact is, the grumbling is that a Walmart is going to raise prices, and they're going to get a little bit of grumbling. Doesn't reach the top. It's okay. We're going to get a little grumbling, and the grumbling is not more than they expected. But somehow, some way, there's a I'll use the term pissed off population out there, and I don't know what happens to that or what, you know, if it ever means a real political change or not, or whether, I mean, I don't know what the, in a country like ours, I don't know where that goes, do you? I mean, but right now, clearly people are hurting, and whether they just accept it forever or not, I don't know. Right now, it looks like they are going to.
Well, I'll just kind of bring that analogy to the stock market.
I mean, well, yeah.
Because, yeah, I mean, there's haves and have-nots in the market right now. And you have your big cap technology, AI stocks just leading the way. And, meanwhile, the IWM, the small caps, the majority of the market is doing absolutely nothing. In fact, it's substantially below its 2024 highs and even farther below its 2021 highs. So you can look at it in two perspectives. As one is like, well, who cares? You know, we don't need a lot of these non-profitable, non-cash flowing companies that rely on, cheap money. You can look at it, you know, that, hey, we just don't need them. Or you can look at it the perspective that you're looking at the U.S. population is that, wow, a majority of these companies are not doing well. And how long can seven companies carry an entire market? So I'll just draw that analogy from what you said.
When you say you're an old market analyst like me, and you think the world somehow is like it used to be. I'm not accusing you of being a dummy. You're clearly not. But I have a real problem until I actually go through them and dig through, look at these numbers. I'm astounded by the numbers. I mean, Apple is up, what, $30 or something in the last month? Say 20 bucks.
Once it broke out of 200, and that was early in June. So actually, if you look at it, it was under 195 in early June, and now it's pushing and knocking on the door at 230.
Right. So let's say $30. There's 15 billion shares outstanding. All right. That's $450 billion. You probably know this. What's the total market cap of Russell?
Less.
56.
Okay.
So Apple's up 8 times the entire market cap of Russell in 3 weeks in value. So in terms of the rest of the market's not going anywhere, I guess in terms of money, who cares?
I care. The people that own those.
I get it. I'm saying in terms of principle, in terms of investing, in terms of all the things you and I care about, we care. But in terms of money, who cares?
Exactly.
We just blew by 8 times. Why would anybody even look at the IWM? And I have a lot of people in it. I mean, we've never seen anything like this.
Hope.
This makes 2000 look like kid stuff.
This makes that's a tough one here.
In terms of money, yeah. Not even close.
Yep, in terms of money flow. As far as valuations go, maybe not so as much because the companies in that 2000 era that were having these outrageous run-ups really had nothing behind them, nothing in the tank. Where you have a company like NVIDIA, it does keep moving higher. It keeps beating estimates and raising. So I guess you just got to sit back and relax and enjoy the ride. And when NVIDIA comes in and says, you know, we finally have reached a plateau. We're ratcheting down expectations, at least for a quarter, one or two quarters. What you got to wait and see is they'll rock the stock in the pre-market, right? They'll hit it down. This is when and if that happens. And then the true key will be, do they just come in and buy the dip? And NVIDIA, a good example of this, NVIDIA hit 140 a couple weeks ago. There was so much open interest in the 140s, it had to go on. Well, thank you after the fact, Jack, right?
Yeah.
You have a 20-point, rally, and now you're halfway back. So I think NVIDIA, is really the key to this market. And then, you look at stuff like, Microsoft, they keep performing. So until you get one of these big guns to say, enough is enough already, this is where we're at, then you just have to go with the flow,
Chief. Well, the amount of money, and this is the part that is really scary. I mean, I'll shift on you a little bit, because a lot of people love these stocks and they don't like it. If anybody says anything bad about them, it's like they want to shoot you. What about Japan in the last 6 days? Do you think all of a sudden the Japanese people have decided these stocks are a terrific bargain and we're just going to buy them? Or do you think the government's pouring money in and buying the stocks themselves and running them up because now everybody's rich? I mean, this is unconscionable in the sense that everybody's getting away with it, but I don't see it ending well. I just hope I can have my people protected, which I do, and the day maybe. But I don't know if it's going to turn. I mean, it never really turned in the Weimar until the place went under. This is too easy of a game for rich people. Can you imagine? I mean, this is too easy of a game. We control the Fed, pour more money in, the money goes to stocks, our stuff goes up, inflation goes up, but we don't care what the price of a drink is. We just made $400 billion in Apple in the last week. We can afford a martini. This is
Yeah, I mean, you can't. I mean, I was just looking at this this Japan, and what's interesting about this is you mentioned their currency, and their currency has been going in the exact opposite direction of its market, whereas our dollar has continued to remain strong here. So, Chief, I mean, like you said, you just mentioned having a martini, and the wealthier can afford it. Well, I guess you got to keep having those martinis until the bar closes.
Well, without a doubt.
And then in Chicago, man, some of these things don't close till 3-4 a.m., right?
So. That's getting less and less. It's really hard. I mean, I don't think you can get that license anymore. And if your place closes, the next person has a real problem getting the extra. I mean, for those that The reason why, and in Detroit, I'm sure it had to be the same way back in the day. Most cities do not have 4 o'clock bars, but when you have a city like Chicago that was so manufacturing oriented, where a lot of people didn't get off work till midnight, it was a three shift town. And I knew guys at the truck docks that would go to the bar at 8 a.m. because that's when they got off work. I mean, normally most people don't go to the bar at 8 a.m. If you've got an 8-to-5 job, let's hope not. I hope they're not working for me if they do. But I mean, there was all kinds of people here that was the time you went to the bar. I mean, it really didn't have a whole lot to do, I hope, with people having to stay out till 4:30 drinking. When we were young, we might have done that, but now there's no shift work here. There's a little bit. But what
things have definitely changed. But I got to hop here, right, Chief. I'll send you an email. I'm out the next 2 weeks.
Okay.
Just next Tuesday. Excuse me. Just next Tuesday. So I'll send you an email as always. Keep an eye on the old time closing high prices because they seem to be the low of the day next the following day. So
I hope you're not going to You're not going to Death Valley, are you, like those other guys?
No. But my annual trek to Northern Michigan.
Hey, good for you. Have a good time.
All right, talk to you soon. All right. Go Blue.
We have Kenny.
I don't see Kenny in the meeting. We do have Hal and Carl, though.
Why don't we bring Carl back because we cut him off? And then we'll have Hal in a few minutes.
Oh, well, you can do that.
Yeah, we brought you back in. By the way, Kevin was quick to say that Trump did have people running against him in the primary, and he did. But when I glossed over that, I wasn't trying to do the big lie. But the primary system is, if 20% of the population shows up in Iowa or Vermont, everybody else is being told right away to quit.
It all comes down to the fact that our system is has these, I don't know if you can call them flaws, because they're design features. They're not accidents. They're the way that the parties have built the primary system. I mean, it's one of the things that I got to know pretty well when I was on the EC and the Libertarian Party, and some of it was truly eye-opening in terms of how, I mean, you think you know how this stuff works when you're, when you're just a schlub that goes and, pushes a button or punches a chat or whatever. Maybe not so much. But the thing that I always thought was fascinating about it is, and I've known this since I was young, is that, if you're the president and you got another term coming, it's your job from a standpoint of being on the top ticket, unless you don't want it, which that doesn't mean you can't get beat, because you can in the general, of course, but at the primary level, it's forget about it. And the thing that's fascinating to me about this is then you look at what happened over in France, okay? Because people talk about they have a much fairer system. Oh, really?
Well, sure they do.
So,
well, in some regards, you vote on
Now, wait a minute.
Okay, you vote on a weekend.
Yes. And by the way, you do it in one day, and it's done with paper ballots, and they have the results the same day or the next morning. Okay, unlike our games that sometimes go on for 2 weeks, beyond it. Oh, by the way, there's so-called drop boxes all over the place. Yeah, and people don't vote twice over there because they ink your finger when you cast a ballot. The fascinating part of it was, in the first round, Le Pen and the what would be considered the far right, pretty much handed everybody their butts and sent them home. So Macron in a rather interesting bit of manipulation. Actually, I want to know what he promised the people, what the bribes were. He actually got a bunch of the far left guys to drop out of the race between the two votes. Okay, so and you'd think that would be backwards, yet that's where his leverage was on the left side of the ticket. And by doing that, he destroyed enough of the fringe side vote that he killed what was an incipient takeover at the parliamentary level. Perfectly legal. All right. Now, but the obvious question is, if you're on the other side of this, you just gave up your opportunity to be a member of parliament to do that. Right? I mean, that's, because you're out of the race. What was the quid pro quo for that?
I actually read something.
I don't have any idea.
Okay. I mean, I read something kind of totally. I don't begin to be an expert. I'd love to have one on the show. I mean, Carl's probably pretty close, but the French elections are a three-stage process. And yeah. they're all kind of on a, well, because the first group, it looked like the people on the right, the Penn, is it the Penn group? It looked like they were going to dominate totally. But I'm reading this article, said, no, what the people can do is they can send a message to the people in power by basically making sure that they realize that they're not happy with the governance, but that the next time through, probably these people will not get the 50% majority, which it looked like they were absolutely going to get because of the next two stages, the way they're run.
Right.
And this article was exactly correct. I don't know who the hell wrote it or where I saw it. It's exactly correct. It said that the population sent the few huge message to Macron and his group, but they really don't want the other guys, quote, in power.
So, well, I don't know. And, I'm not French.
So well, I'm saying that this is what... Yeah, the juxtaposition and whatever the guy said turned out exactly to happen.
Yeah, but I just thought it was, it was an interesting play that happened, okay, and clearly those candidates did drop out.
But the conservatives, the right wing, still has the highest percentage of people in parliament, but just not.
Oh, yeah.
It's just not 50.
Well, and that's the problem is that what doing this did. Is made a majority parliament impossible. Okay, so now what you're stuck with is you're going to have to build coalitions in order to get anything done because otherwise you can't get enough votes.
Well, so the flip side is our system where you can't get anybody in there as independent. You can't ever go against the two people, and we have one more party than communist Russia. That's the flip side.
Yep, and I
don't know which is worse or which is better. I honestly don't know.
Well, I don't know. I mean, historically speaking, the only way that you change that is that one of the two parties dies. Okay, literally ends up.
Well,
you know,
changes names, the same people.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think I could argue that the Whigs actually went away.
Well, but you mentioned earlier the primary process, and I think if you want to understand today's primary process, and this is a tough one. Especially for our buddy Ricardo, because he wasn't even around. You have to zero in on 1968.
Yep.
And you have to say, okay, what happened? There's an enormous amount of money that backs these people in the get-go. And the person that has the most money, the people who back him, want him to win in Iowa. And you know what? I love Iowa. I don't really think that 10% of the blue-haired ladies in Iowa should be picking my president, to be honest with you. Why this isn't a national thing or something, I don't know. But it is. Okay, I'm not, I'm whining about things that aren't. Then you go to New Hampshire. You know, really, I've been there once. It was okay. I mean, what is there, 700,000 people in New Hampshire for that? I don't know. I mean, really? So there's massive amounts of money behind these people that are plodding along. And everybody, the minute somebody wins two in a row, the pressure on the other people by all the donors is, I'm not giving money to three people. Get the bleep out. That's the pressure. Now, if you hearken back to 1968, this was going on, and all of a sudden, a guy named Bobby Kennedy said, none of these people, even though they've got this money raised, look to me to be that unbeatable, and the primaries are more spread out then. Now, notice how now they're not. They pull them all together, And so he says, you know, I can win this. So he goes after the primaries in, like, California, which he won. And, by the way, there's all kinds of dumb. I mean, you could, way after, by the numbers, you could say, gee, Illinois's got a bunch of people. So does California. Their primaries are late. I could win those. And guess what? Nobody gets a first ballot win. And I could win. Okay, so he wins in California. And coincidentally gets shot that night.
Yep.
Coincidentally. I'm sure one had nothing to do with the other. Coincidentally gets murdered that night. And since then, every move has been to have the first couple of primaries anoint somebody who's got the money backing. Am I wrong or right? I mean, I'm just saying.
No, you're absolutely right, Chief. And you know, the thing, like I said, the internal machinery behind all this stuff is, you know, when you see even parts of it at the third party level. Okay, I mean, I never got embedded far enough into either the Democrat or Republican side to see it, but I did on the Libertarian side. When you see the internal machinery, you wonder. Nobody that actually has an interest in seeing fair contests could look at that and not throw up.
Yeah, well, yeah.
All right. So, I mean, even at the third party level. It becomes rage against the machine. I mean, you really do look at it and you go, what the F did I just participate in?
Well, someday if you're in a hurricane, Carl, which I hope you're not, but you're hunkered down, you have nothing to do, cable doesn't work, but you got your internet, just dig through five states at random and find out what you have to do to get on a ballot.
I know all about it.
Yeah. You'll grab the air sickness bag in the middle of a hurricane.
Oh, Chief, I was a treasurer for a House candidate in Florida's 1st District. Okay. I know all about that because guess who was one of the people that was pounding pavement? You had two options in Florida if you wanted to get on the ballot. One is to essentially pay for a nascent political campaign that doesn't have a lot of money backing, be a huge fine. Okay, that's one choice. The other one is go out and get petitions. Well, okay, so if you don't have the backing to just stroke a big check, the other way you do it is you go get the petition signatures. Well, that means you got to pound pavement.
You got to get one of the few law firms in Chicago that are good at this and make sure that they, if there's not a comma in your address, they can throw in the top.
You better make sure it's
absolutely correct. You absolutely make sure. Now some states. I think I read something with something's going on here, where people are running for school board or something, and your signatures have to be notarized.
Oh, I'll tell you what, some of it gets crazy. But we had, you know, the thing is that let's say that the requirement is you have to have 5,000 signatures, right, for a House district or whatever.
You better come in with 30, so they won't. They won't.
I'm just saying. No, it's not five, okay, because a large number of them are going to end up challenged or disregarded.
That's why you need 50, so people won't go through the trouble of going through 50,000, and it becomes too much money for them.
Well, I'm just saying, it has to be, you have to well outperform in order to be reasonably certain that you'll, you know, that either no one's going to bother because there's obviously enough, or they're going to go ahead and try challenge them, and you're still going to have enough, okay? It at all levels, this system is, is stacked.
Well, Dr. J's whiff, and she's now Bridget McGrath, who's a terrific lady. She's now a retired judge. When she ran for judge, this is 20 years ago. Well, she's been retired 2 years, so say 22 years ago. She's pregnant at the time, and she's trying to be straight, right? but she had some people helping her but she's basically on the Armitage L platform in the morning, and you know, she's an attractive lady, very bright, and you know then that the people, most of them near the L platform, if they're walking to the L, are in the area you're looking for, right? So they probably have the right zip code. So she ended up with, I don't know how many, this is for judge, so you don't need like 9 zillion, but she ended up with them, and she turns them in, and I think, I don't know if she didn't hire the right law firm to do the thing right, which of course is a mortal sin, because if you didn't hire one of the three and did it yourself, now they're really going to find something wrong with it. I don't know if she didn't put where she lives, Seminary Avenue, or whether she didn't put what apartment number. She did something that a third grader would say, what the hell's the difference? And they threw them all out. So, but she was smart enough to have gone in there early enough to where she could go out and get them again.
Right.
But still, and this is massive game that nobody wants anybody else to run. And of course, if you let everybody run, everybody just signs somebody's name 100 times on there, and they cheat on the other end. So I don't know which is worse necessarily, but I don't know what the game is. Will we end up? Anybody who thinks this is any kind of a democracy is out of their mind. I mean, in terms of, yeah. I mean, it's something. It's something. You get the vote, but you get the vote between Tweedledum and Tweedledee. I mean, you know, clearly there's a difference in where these two guys are going. But is it where they're going, or is it where the people giving the money are going?
Well, if you looked at, if you took any look at this so-called platform that showed up yesterday late in the afternoon, you just want to sit there and throw up, okay?
Which side? Both are.
Oh, well, the GOP's showed up, which is, you know, I mean, it's Trump's authorship because he's the presumptive nominee, right? So it's his. And two points that were in this one document, it's like 20 bullet points. One of them is eliminate inflation.
The dude raised the money supply 40% in 1 year in his last year, and he has the absolute nerve to accuse the other guy of causing the inflation.
Of course. And by the way, the other one that's in there is do not touch either Social Security or Medicare, which, by the way, Medicare is an 80% unfunded program, which that is at the federal level what is driving 85% of the inflation.
I would say that if it was you and me running, you know, neither one of us liked the lie very much. Matter of fact, not like the lie at all. I would say, I could honestly say I'm not going to touch Medicare. That doesn't mean I'm not free to cut all the costs that all these places are charging Medicare. Right.
Well,
I mean, it's two fat ladies dancing ahead of a pin, but I don't want to change Medicare for the person, but I want to change it to the sense of what prices are we paying for this stuff.
Well, Chief, I put, you know, back when I wrote Leverage, I put a nascent plan together that I had to shrink in order to, you know, to meet the requirements of getting into a mass market publication book, right? And then negotiated with Wiley that I could, you know, that there were things I could still use without, you know, because of course you assign copyright when a mass market, you know, publisher picks up your stuff. So a couple of years later, I put out this the bill to fix medicine for everybody. If any candidate picked that sucker up and actually went after it, the entire problem within the federal budget related to medical care would disappear. And by the way, so would the problem with you paying for it out of your pocket if you're not on Medicare or Medicaid. All right. However, you would take a very deep, although it would be short-lived, recession, because you'd also fire 4 out of 5 people that are currently in that field. They'd have to go find something else to do.
You fire everybody else but the doctors. Duh. Who cares?
Only doctors and nurses actually help, right? Everybody else is trying to skim their money off. And so the thing is, though, is that, oh, my God, we'd have this, you know, this huge economic disorder. Well, yes, you would. However, think about this. You take 80% of the current spend out of the system in general for everybody, not just for Medicare and Medicaid, but for everyone. Two things happen. First off, Medicare is an 80-20 program. So, by the way, this changes nothing in terms of the average person's actual spend out of pocket. But what it does do immediately is it creates a tectonic shift in where the cost of production is the most reasonable for a manufacturer, for a service provider to actually locate their stuff, and moves it from Europe, China, Hong Kong, Vietnam, whatever, back into the United States. Now, is it enough by itself to change all of it and reverse it? No, it's not. But it would be an enormous shift, and money goes where it's treated well. So the yes, there'd be a huge dislocation, but it would not be the end of the United States by any stretch of the imagination. It wouldn't be the end of medical innovation. What it would do is be the end of the deficit spending problem.
Well, I mean, we got a dash here, but one thing I want to run by you on Friday is you always are articulate regarding the Medicare and the problems the federal budget's having, but I think since I do a lot of bills for people who are on Medicare, Medicare pays way less than anybody else.
Well, actually, Medicaid pays way less than anybody else.
Medicare does too, but...
Medicare by law cannot pay below cost. Medicaid doesn't have that restriction.
All right, we'll kick it around on Friday, but...
Yep.
S&P futures up 11, Nasdaq futures up 66. Real quick break, and then we have Professor Helsner.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control. Right here, right now.
Hear ye, hear ye. The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air.
Money. Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 70. Do we have the Professor Hal?
Yes, we do.
Was he there? Hal, we're not hearing you. Did he mute himself?
There we go.
Hal, did you mute yourself?
I guess my kids have been playing with my microphone.
Oh God, I hate it.
I came down to my desk today, and the wire mesh thing on my microphone, it was laying on the side of my desk, so they must have broke it. I have to use my laptop mic.
What do you figure? When you raise a kid and you got three of them, what do you think the total?
Four.
Well, you got the three together, the triplets.
I got triplets. We got triplets and a 15-year-old. Yeah.
What do you think the total cost is of all the stuff they break growing up?
Well, if you think about all of our furniture in Utah, probably 80%.
God.
Our townhouse was in pretty rough shape when we moved from Salt Lake to New York. I made the mistake of showing my kids Jaws, and one of the triplets, Aiden, he was so fascinated by Jaws, and he had a little, you know, toy rubber shark that he filled up one of those plastic bins that I used for their toys. He filled that up with water, and he made a Jaws movie in their bedroom.
God.
The water.
So, yeah, you know, it's funny being the 50s and 60s moms. Not everybody, but in those days, mostly everybody was a stay-at-home mom. Nobody. I used to hear stuff in the on the trading floor, where you knew everybody, about what people's kids did, and I mean, I don't know. I mean, from age two on, I mean, you never put your finger on the wall. God help you if you sliced on the countertop without having a dish under it where you might slice the counter. All that stuff, I don't know anybody who did any of that stuff, because some parents were like, I don't know what they were. Nobody did that stuff. And then I get in the OEX pit, I'm hearing about a kid will spray paint the side of the car or something. I'm like, what you did what? I can't
we,
even.
Well, my brothers and I, we did some crazy stuff. We painted a blue, black B, a letter B on a neighbor's house. I have four brothers, and one summer we spent with our cousins. They're the same age, and there's two boys and a girl. And we spray painted this big B on the neighbor's house. I don't know why we did it. My brother Ryan fell off the house at age two. He was on the house roof at age two. I don't know how he got up there, but he fell off the house into a bush. Didn't break an arm. And then my finger got stuck in the door jamb, and my mom accidentally shut the door on my finger, and it just sliced my left ring finger off my hand. and she had to drive me to the hospital to get, you know, sewed back on. I still got the scar. And then when I was one, the back of my hand got burnt by a electric burner. And then I can't tell you everything that happened on my birthdays.
Well, no wonder you are how you are.
Well, every birthday that I can remember up until my parents' divorce was War of the Roses, you know, arguments with dishes and spaghetti flying. It was crazy. And then one I think it was my fifth grade
birthday. Why, they were blaming the other for you? Each other for you?
I don't know what was going on, but man, they were really violent people. Married. I mean, it was bad. I remember year my mom, she was driving 80 miles an hour down a two-lane highway in Bruno, Idaho, and she passes a truck, and then we bounce off like three or four cows. And my friends, she was taking home my birthday party. My friends were bouncing around the back seat because none of us had seatbelts on. It was the 1970s.
Oh, no. Yeah, no way of those.
I had a concussion that birthday. Yeah.
Oh, God. Hey, I want you to talk. Let's not get too technical here, although some of the stuff is somewhat technical. You know, I've been away from academia for a long time, but I'm seeing stuff here that I've never seen really ever, except maybe 2000 a little bit. I was just talking to Joel somewhat about, you know, he was talking about the Russell, and you know, first of all, I have people in the Russell, so I'm not disparaged. Sometimes when I question somebody's logic on the show, it's because I'm questioning my own, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I want to do the right thing for my people all the time. And by the way, if I can get any kind of information helping out from that from anybody on the show, because we have some of the brightest people I've ever met on the show with me, you know, I'm going to do it. And my question is, I've never seen anything. Now, I'm sure somebody somewhere is going to dig up, where I'm off by a buck. I've never seen one or two stocks go up in terms of wealth like the Microsofts and the Apple have done. I mean, this Apple has gone up 8 times now in 5 weeks. 8 times the entire value of the Russell. Now, we're talking $30 times 15 billion shares outstanding, so $450 billion. Now, the stock's revenue isn't up at all, and neither are their earnings up a little bit. Where does 450 comes from? That's question number two, is though how this stuff is being inflated. But what does that do to... Let's say not so much M2, okay, which would be the money supply. What does it do to the availability of credit just in the stock universe? There's now $450 billion sitting there of equity, of which people can now buy $900 billion more of stock. I mean, if you had a stock here at PTI that was worth $500 and now it's worth $5,000, you now have $4,500 worth of buying power that you can borrow against that stock. So your wealth not only has increased, you know, in terms of what your sheets say that you get from PTI, but now if you call up and say, I want to buy some more, do I have any buying power? And the answer is yes.
Yeah.
So the market is on its own world here, but is it because it's in its own monetary world as well? That's kind of question number one. I mean the amount of wealth in the last 5 weeks between Microsoft and Nvidia bouncing back, and Apple and all, and Tesla's had this massive run up. Meta was way up the other day and it was down some yesterday. I think we're talking $800 billion to $1 trillion in wealth.
Yeah. Well, I think there's two things going on here. One, I think investors in general, they see the writing on the wall. I think they know the Fed is, you know, we think the Fed is being restrictive, but I don't think it is. You look at consumer lending.
Money supply has been up 3 months in a row.
Yeah, you look at consumer lending, you look at business lending, you look at margin debt, and the only one that's, you know, stalling out is commercial lending, but it's not dropping, right? Consumer lending is rising, margin debt is rising, and so I think the Fed is being, even though the rates are, you know, higher than they were for like almost, you know, a decade, you know, near zero, even though they're high. I mean, they're really at a point where you would consider them normal, right? You know, you'd consider the federal funds rate in the history of the world, you know, about 4 or 5% as being normal.
Well, you would never.
They're not very elevated.
Well, it depends. I mean, let's not be like the people on TV. Let's not. It's not normal to have a short-term rate 5.5 and a ten-year rate 4.7. That's not normal at all.
I would say the federal funds rate being around 4 or 5 is kind of a, you know, it's odd to people who grew up, you know, who monitored the Fed during their college years, right? But for people who are 40, 50 years old, it's not odd to have a federal funds rate at 4 or 5%. It's just not that weird, right?
Well, the constant inverted curve is very weird.
Oh yeah, it is. Yeah. So you have this interest rate that the Fed controls at 4 or 5%, and in the recent relative history, that you would consider that high, but it's not really that high if you go back further. So the Fed, I think, is it appears that the Fed is being restrictive, but it's really not if you look at lending and M2. So you have the Fed inflating, right? And I think people know that most of the growth is from government spending. We're saying, you know, we've been told for like 2 or 3 years that the economy is growing, but it's growing because we're running $1.6 trillion deficits. If it wasn't for those deficits, where would we be? A lot of the jobs are either part-time jobs, a lot of the jobs are being added. They're not the jobs that we lost during the pandemic. Those jobs don't seem to be coming back because jobs are becoming part-time. The recent job gains are mostly part-time. Full-time jobs are down. Part-time jobs are up. And a lot of the jobs are going to people not born in the United States. And a lot of those job gains are government jobs. So I think what investors are seeing...
Well, they're in the medical area and in government.
Yeah. I think what investors are seeing or thinking is that we're going to have a substantial recession, I think.
What do you now again? No. When everybody can define, I'm sorry to interrupt. When everybody can define recession, so you can't. We do it on the show a lot. I mean, because everybody here has their own, you know, the older definitions. I'm going to say, hell, you and I will be able to define. I think there's a good chance that you and I could right now say we've been in a recession for 20 years.
I agree with that. Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of, if you pour enough money into the system, you're never going to have a recession in terms of the old definition.
Especially the way the Federal Reserve, or especially the way the government calculates inflation. I think inflation has been underestimated for at least 20 years. I think it's a lot higher than they're telling us. And what that does is it makes the real GDP number in terms of percentage growth look okay. Instead of being a -1, it's, you know, 2%, right? If inflation were measured more accurately, you'd probably see GDP numbers, percentage changes in GDP numbers, probably closer to zero.
Well, one of the dudes in works in the building, and I talk about him all the time. He's a good friend. You know, he does some stuff in people's houses and everything else too. But he said to me, he goes, I went through some of my old receipts. No, I don't think he listens to the show or whatever. He's working in the morning, and he said, since before COVID, he goes, virtually everything I buy, you know, the nails, the glue, tools, all that stuff, he goes, it's like 50% across the board. Yeah. Why are they saying 20? Yeah. This is the guy says, he goes, everything's 50, 45, 50. What are we talking about?
Yeah.
But I mean, he's a regular guy. He's done his conclusions on his own. Now, what's he supposed to do? Get a sandwich signed, write a letter to his congressman, get a bullet? And go shoot somebody. I mean, he's not going to do any of those things.
Well, he's got no power.
Got no power. I mean, he might as well, you know. He's had, you know, he like us. He has the power of somebody's pet Airedale. I mean, right?
You need money. Yeah. And two, you need time, and he probably has neither. Right.
But he has an understanding now that he's being lied to.
Yeah.
And I think,
you know, you put those things together, and you got these investors thinking, well, NVIDIA's going to be around. Apple's going to be around. Microsoft's going to be around. So I'm going to put all this inflated money into those stocks because I know they're not going to go anywhere, right? So I think that's what's going on here. You have these feelings that, you know, the cracks are going to start forming, and the economy's going to maybe perhaps collapse.
All right,
even the people at the top end.
They know
these companies aren't going anywhere, so they're putting all that money in these very few companies.
I'm envisioning myself on TV, which I'll never be again, I'm sure. I've got a face for radio. And I'm envisioning myself saying what you just said. By the way, I agree with you. And the first person is going to say, Professor, it hasn't happened yet. We're tired of listening to it.
Well, it hasn't happened yet because, we're not supposed to be running $1.6 trillion deficit.
But we also
the economy is growing.
But we just made, I'll round it up, we just made $1 trillion in the stock market in 10 stocks in the last 10 days.
Yeah.
What's the problem if you and I own those stocks?
Yeah. Well, the problem is...
I just made three pickup trucks and a new house. What's the problem?
The problem is it's for everybody else.
I don't care about everybody else.
People who are reading the teleprompters, they're doing fine.
Yeah, no, but I've been... With the people, everybody else's, and I'm giving you crap because I agree with you.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody cares about the everybody else's. Unfortunately, unless they start voting or shooting, and they're never doing either one. Well, in Chicago, we're shooting, but I don't know if it's for those reasons. And I don't want to see people, but is this election going to be any choice for this guy, for somebody who's going to say, hey, I understand you're getting screwed by 50%, I'm going to do something about it. No, he's going to do it. We have a guy who caused it, accusing the other guy of who's telling the other guy he's the solution.
Yeah.
I mean, let's shift gear for a sec.
I don't hear any solutions with regard to debt or inflation. None of them are on.
The solution is you got to pull some of this money out of the economy, and if you do, most of the people will end up okay, but the people in the market who have stocks are going to see the stocks come back down some. Right? It's going to happen. But right now, I mean, if you put too much money into the system like we did in 2000, but back then the Fed said, okay, we put too much in, we better drag some back out. This group's saying, wait a minute, this feels pretty good. But let's shift gears for a second. I'm just basically ragging on our people, which they deserve it. But what is the phenomenon in Japan? And they now have our... Let me dig it up here. I'm going to say that we owe 1.2 or 3 times... Let me find it. You probably know off the top of your head. We owe 1.2 or 3 times GDP in deficit, correct? I think Japan leads the world. They're 2.6 or something years of gross domestic product they owe. We owe... Our national debt is $34 trillion, and our... where the hell is our GDP? Is... have here someplace. I think our GDP is like 26. 28.5. So our debt is 1.2 times GDP. Japan is double that. And they have banks that have been zombies for a while. When I say banks, zombie means you have no equity, but you have cash. So it doesn't affect anybody coming and going out the door or checking a counter or with their car loan. And that's a concept that maybe someday Al and I will take some time to explain how you can be a bank that's technically underwater but open for business for decades. But it happens, right, Hal?
Yeah.
I mean, so now they've decided they're going to push money into the system.
Wow.
And what's happened, so the yen is dropping like a rock compared to the dollar, and actually worse against some of the other currencies of the world. But what does it do? The market goes straight to the moon, right? The market's got to be up 15-20% in the last, 3 months?
Yeah, that's the Cantillon effect, right?
Richard Cantillon is
a great economist that mainstream economics doesn't talk about. He was basically the Michael Bleury of his day. And John Law, the first European central banker, that's the reason why there's the word millionaire. Because John Law created a bubble called the Mississippi Bubble. Cantillon recognized what he was doing. He bought low, sold high. When he sold, he fled France and moved to Italy because he felt like he was going to get beheaded, right?
That'd be a reason to move. Yeah, that would be a reason to move.
Yeah, he this is what we call the Cantillon effect, and the Cantillon effect means that people who get this inflated money first have the opportunity to buy uninflated assets, and then by the time it gets to me and you, Tom, prices have gone up.
Oh yeah. So
in an inflationary period, the people who get this money first benefit, but everybody else who gets it last get punished.
If at all, they get it.
Yeah.
Hey, I got a question for you regarding your profession. If you guys, you economics professor sort of dudes, if you did your job properly, careful here. If you did your job properly, you wouldn't have a bunch of creatures like me, because I haven't taken a class in a while, so I'm blameless here, saying the Japanese stock market is up. I would actually say the value of Japanese currency is down relative to the stock market. Because that's really the proper way to say it, isn't? And nobody says that.
Yeah. Well, the problem with the profession is there's this emphasis to publish, right? And when you publish, you can't focus on teaching. And so what happens is, because people are so focused on publishing, the way they teach is they use these books that are written by the basically the politically connected people, right? Yet all the biggest textbooks are essentially pro-state in one way or another, right? And everybody uses the same set of textbooks. And so you have all these people, you know, showing the PowerPoint slides of these textbooks. And so there's this emphasis on research and reliance on these textbooks. And I don't use those textbooks. I just don't use them. I mean, I might use them to give people the language of an economist, but my focus is on teaching and not on the research anymore. And so about 2013 or 14 is when I really started questioning mainstream economic thinking. I mean, it started when I was teaching macro principles at A&T State University in about the year 2006 and 7. I got to the point where, man, I just didn't believe anything in the textbook, right? And I started deviating substantially from there. And then it really happened when I was publishing my macroeconomics book, which started out as, you know, a mathematical treatment of macroeconomics, right? It's basically a book.
It makes me dying to go buy it if it's all math.
Yeah, it's basically a model. One version of it uses Maple math software to build the simulation of the macroeconomy. But what it evolved into, it evolved into a critique of macroeconomics. So the last two chapters are basically a full-on criticism of mainstream macroeconomics. So that's the problem that we have as a profession, of these reliance on these teaching methods. I think there's very little critical thinking going on within the profession.
Well, is it that, Hal, or is it you start, no matter what you do, you start with some sort of an assumption, and people are charged with, you know, a job. For instance, I think that the government, and most governments, and why you have people like Cruz running around saying we got to go back to the gold standard, you go with some kind of an idea that money has to be based on something, right? And this has been an idea since, you know, God knows when. I mean, clearly, when the Romans put the amount of silver in a coin that was equal to a day's pay, they had some logic behind it, right? And then all of a sudden they kept shaving it all out. But the idea is, you teach people, especially in a country like the U.S., where there's very little currency. You're not trading going from France to Germany back in the day before there was a euro, and trading every time you step across to the next saloon, you're getting a different currency. So people here are locked into this, and you actually have a group of people that you hire, the Federal Reserve or whatever, and you say your job is to make sure there's allegedly monetary stability in this country, to where the dollar in my pocket is pretty much the same as it was a year ago or next year. And because we're going to value everything off dollars. And the idea is a dollar is supposed to be, that's why this whole idea of Bitcoin being a currency when it's traded like a artificial stock, I mean, that's crazy. Your currency is supposed to be stable, right?
Well,
but give me one more second here. But then all of a sudden, you start tinkering with it, and you run it up, you know, 20% or 10-12% a year like you did in the 70s and 80s, and all of a sudden, but your population is just not ready for it. I mean, you're just not set up. You're going to go into a bar and somebody's going to say, "Man, this damn beer is $10. 3 years ago, it was $7.50." You're just not set up unless it's you or me next to the guy and wanting to ruin his evening, saying, "Hey, Joe, the beer's not up at all. The value of the dollar in your pocket is down 30%. He's going to look at you like you're from Mars. Yet you and I would be correct, right?
Yeah.
We're not set up for people to think that way.
The Federal Reserve was never set up to create stable money.
Well, sure they were.
The money supply grows at 1 or 2% and it's stable, right? It was never set up for that. It was set up to create this inflation, right? It was set up for the bankers.
If it's set up to have a controlled inflation and steady, you can't have controlled inflation if you screw around with the money supply up and down all over the place. So it's sort of implied. It never was specified, correct?
Well, with Federal Reserve policy, if you target interest rates, your interest rates are kind of smooth, but your money supply growth rates are all over the place. And then if you target the money supply, then your interest rates fluctuate wildly, right? And we saw the interest rates fluctuate wildly during the 1980s, right?
Yeah, but we never had a money supply.
The range, the federal funds rate, was a lot wider in the 1980s.
But if,
right?
if we would have,
I think Volcker was trying to grow reserves at a steadier pace.
If we went off, the U.S. went off the gold standard in 1968. If they would have said, "Okay, we're going off the gold standard, but our economy grows 2% a year, so our money supply is going to go up 2% a year," and put it exactly there, we'd have been fine off the gold standard. But we didn't. We went up 8 to 10% a year because we wanted to pay the Vietnam debt.
Going off the gold standard and going to the God standard,
yeah,
took a lot longer in the United States than it did in like say Britain.
I think we started popping money supply growth. It already was happening. That's why De Gaulle was showing up with the dollar, saying, "Give me the gold."
Well, FDR took us off the gold standard in terms of domestic exchanges. Nixon took us off the gold standard in terms of international exchanges with an executive order in the 1970s, right?
In that time period,
they replaced gold on the reserve notes, or on our greenbacks. They replaced gold with God, right?
I think God We Trust
started appearing on the money in the 1950s.
That was an Eisenhower thing, in God We Trust. That had nothing to do with
that. Well,
him being religious.
Yeah. Well, I think it had to deal with, you know, going off the gold standard under FDR in domestic transactions, to Nixon in the 1970s going off the gold standard in international transactions. That was a, you know, 40-year period of time, 30-40-year period of time, right? And people had to be Americans had to be what? They had to be conditioned to think that, in a way, to think that the money wasn't backed by gold anymore, right? So they replaced. I mean, if you look at the bills themselves,
well, some were backed by silver, right?
Yeah. Well, if you look at them in the 1930s, and 1920s, it said redeemable in gold or redeemable in silver, right?
Well, the 1950s. I still have a couple of the bucks at home that say silver certificate.
Yeah. In the 1950s, you don't see that anymore. You see "In God We Trust." So they erased the L, right? They erased the L on gold and made it God, right? So it's backed by God in the 1950s. And then Nixon went full on and eliminated the gold standard with respect to international
because he wanted to put money in and pay the Vietnam War debt down. I mean,
exactly, right, yeah. They wanted to full on inflate. They couldn't do it with having to back with, you know, gold international.
Well,
right?
It's because, remember, you probably don't. This was big news when I was a kid. Whenever De Gaulle would show up with a whole bunch of huge hunks of $100 bills and demand gold, and everybody was all pissed off at him. Because we were still officially $35 an ounce. And if you look at the amount of, I tell you what, I wish I go back to those days. Not go back physically, but I think that we had the amount of dollars in circulation was like, versus the amount of gold we had, was probably like 200, we probably had $200 to an ounce, you know, 190, something like that. And yet the official rate was 35. You know what, I'm going to find this on this debt clock while we're at break. I'll show you what the difference is, because it's on here. Where the hell is it? It's a, you know, I will find it. It's on here. It's on this page somewhere. That's not getting huge. In the meantime, let's go to break. SB Futures up 9. NASDAQ Futures up 56. Be right back.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. If you're nervous about the stock market and considering diversification, or are looking for a rate of return way better than your banks, consider adding rental properties to your portfolio. Whether it's a condo, single family, or multi-unit building, I can help you select a property that meets your financial needs. Call or text me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456. Or visit my website at myhomesourcerealty.com. That's myhomesourcerealty.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
I can't believe what I let Hal just do to me here. While digging for this stuff, I found something else that's even more bizarre that Hal's going to say, where the hell did you find that? You know, Hal, that's the problem with doing research. You're elaborating on stuff you don't want to see, right?
Tom, you gotta tweet it, man. That's where you got to put it all.
You got to tweet it? That'll work?
Well, you don't have to look for it on your desk.
Just saying. S&P Futures up 9, NASDAQ Futures up 55, Dow Futures up 20 over in Europe. We have Europe stocks lower. I'm not sure. We got the DAX down 121.7%. We had the FTSE down 26.3%, CAC around down 70. That's a full 0.9%, as they're saying here. Europe stacks lower on French political outlook. I don't know why that is, but it's that's the headline. A Nikkei up 799, what Helen and I are talking about. It's a full 2%, 41,480. A Hang Seng down 83 cents, call that flat, 75.23. That's not a good day when you're down that low. Shanghai up 36, 29.59. It's going to try and struggle to get back to 3,000. It's a 1.2% move. Yesterday, Dow down 31, S&P up 5, NASDAQ up 50. So S&P and NASDAQ at record highs, down not so much. Bonds, a 10-year up 3 basis points, 4.30. The Bund up 1 basis point, 2.53. Japan up to 1.07. It's down a basis point, even though, but it's been up, so it was 9.93 a few weeks ago. Oil, down 42 cents, 81.91, still top of the range. Rent down 37 cents, 85.38. Natural gas up 5 cents, 241. RBOB unchanged, 253. Gold down pretty good yesterday. It's up a whole 30 cents today. That's not much of a bounce. 23.63. Silver already is bouncing, up 33 cents, 31.25. Copper unchanged, 460. Bitcoin up 961, 57,313. They got hammered down from 65 to 55, and now it's bounced back up to 57 in the last couple days. This is kind of what we're talking about, the foreign exchange. Euro steady at 108.15, British pound 128. So the dollar is down a little bit to those guys, but the yen is still 161, up another 30 cents. So the yen is real high here, which means that the Japanese government's pouring. The yen is real low because it's 161 yen to the dollar now. So the Japanese government keeps pouring money in. So their currency's going down and their market's going up. Duh. Ricardo, we got first traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:39 here in Chicago, 73 degrees right now with a high of 77. Interposal clouds and sunshine with a thunderstorm in parts of the area. Not as warm but humid. Tonight, a little rain from tropical rainstorm. We're going to have a low of 67 degrees. On to Phoenix, 90 degrees right now with a high of 116. Sunny and hot. The temperature tying the record from 1958. Danger of dehydration and heat stroke if outside for too long. Tonight is going to be partly cloudy and warm with a low of 88 degrees. On to traffic in Chicago. Chicago. Iman Kennedy from Montrose, you're looking at 38 minutes. Iman Edens from Lake Cook, 60 minutes. Iman Eisenhower from Wall, 33 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 22 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 31 minutes. On to the MLB. Yesterday, we got the Twins beating the White Sox 8-6. The Braves beat the Diamondbacks 5-4. And today, we got a couple games too. Cubs play the Orioles in Maryland at 5:35 p.m. White Sox play the Twins in Chicago at 7:10 p.m. And the Diamondbacks play the Braves in Arizona at 8:40 p.m. Back over to you, Chief.
I forget what news station I was watching last night. Did you happen to catch? Did Vegas check this out for us, Ricardo? Didn't Vegas had the highest recorded temperature ever yesterday, and they had some guy running around talking about how dangerous it was, and stuff you wouldn't even think. I mean, in Chicago, you know, if it gets maybe gets to 100, which is pretty brutal with the humidity and all that stuff, but it's nothing like the threatening stuff like when I've been in Phoenix and so forth when in the summertime. I mean, if you get in your car, and you know, especially for the ladies because they wear short shorted most guys, and if your butt touches a you know, the buckle on the seatbelt, you got to burn. You know, if you got a black steering wheel, you better let the air conditioning come on before you touch it, or your hand is in trouble. But the guy was going around yesterday that the pavement was 163. So they had some doctor, especially if it was, you know, it was dark pavement, it was asphalt, they had some doctor talking about how many people in emergency rooms with burnt feet that are walking along. And if you stepped on the pavement with your bare foot, so you have a second degree burn in 30 seconds and a third degree burn in like a minute or minute and a half or something. If you lean up against like a light pole, the light pole is 140 degrees. I mean, it's stuff you don't even realize when it's the difference between like 100 and 120 is it is really life threatening, right, Al? I mean, you got to be careful.
Yeah, when we went to in 2013 when we moved to Utah, I took the family. Well, at that point it was just me, Joseph, and my wife Lynn. We went to Vegas because her brother-in-law was there, and we were waiting to move into our condo that we bought. And we were in Vegas. We were at the Stratosphere because they have that, you know, Space Needle thing on the roof. And we were on the observation deck of the Space Needle in Vegas on the Stratosphere. It was like 120 degrees out there, and the wind was blowing slightly, and it felt like a blast furnace. I've never felt that kind of heat before. It was just unbelievably dry and just hot. It's crazy.
It says right.
It's 90 degrees in New York City with like 95% humidity. You might as well not even take a shower.
Go on a subway platform. It's disgusting.
Yeah, it's pretty bad when it's 90 here and it's 100% humidity. It's just almost impossible to, you know, feel comfortable here.
The city holds the heat well. Ricardo, what'd you find?
120 degrees in Vegas yesterday. It's 3 degrees higher than the last record.
Wow.
So yeah, it was pretty hot yesterday.
Yeah, wasn't even close. The subway platforms, they're all well over 100, right? Because they're down so low, they don't really get any ventilation.
It's even worse when the subway comes roaring in because the air conditioner is pumping all that heat out.
Yeah.
Into the platform. It's even worse when the subway cars are right there and you're standing on the platform.
Yeah, the subway in Chicago is very pleasant. You get on there, it's actually cool. Not in New York.
It's elevated though, right? It's elevated, so you're.
No, we have a lot of subways, but they're only one level down, not three. The cars aren't as big. The air conditioning's not as crazy, but it's nicer. So, just when I said I'll find the gold ratio here, I should not have done this, Colonel. What is the dollar to gold ratio now? How many dollars do we have per ounce that we have per ounce of gold we have? You should know this. Well, take a stab.
Oh yeah, you asked me a question.
Yeah, the dollar dollar to gold ratio right now in the government.
Let me check.
All right, I'll give you a hint. 1,772. You got 17,772. Dollars out there for every ounce of gold the government has. What do you suppose that number was in 1913?
Oh, probably a lot higher, right?
No. $27. $27. Huh. I mean, we had almost, probably, I won't say as much gold, but right, almost as much gold, and we had way less dollars, right? But here's one I didn't even know they had. Well, these guys are, I got to stop going.
Is that the gold that the Federal Reserve has?
Yeah, well, Fort Knox and whatever, okay, the place in New York, everybody, yeah. Or if somebody showed up and said, hey, here's the dollars, where's the gold? It's supposed to, well, it was supposed to be even. It never was. Well, back in 1913, it probably was, $27 an ounce. So get a load of this. I never even knew there was a ratio here. The dollar to gold ratio, the five-year ratio. Now, you might answer, what the hell is that? What that is over the last 5 years, the amount of increase in the amount of dollars versus the increase in the amount of gold, just over the last 5 years. I never knew there was such a ratio. Think wild here, Hal.
50%? Up
50%? No, $12,500. $12,500 worth of money we've put into the system per ounce of gold we've actually accumulated in the last 5 years. Is that unbelievable? Which we've just been talking about, 40-50% increase in the M2 in the last 5 years, right?
Yeah.
Look,
I have friends on Facebook who are saying, should I buy gold? And I go, well, if billionaires are buying it, it probably sounds like a pretty good thing.
Well, but the commercial says they're buying it. We're at kind of all-time highs here, and the reason why I'm hanging on to a lot of my clients, I have somewhat, and we have some people in gold and silver as part of their portfolios, and we hadn't done well, and all of a sudden in the last 2 months we've done very well. But one thing I have that I can't figure it out, Carl, so I don't know whether Dan Janitas and I and a few other people on the show think I'm just being, we're a little early and we're going to make out like a bandit, or we're just being stubborn. And that's always, whenever you hang on to a position, that is the thing. You're just a little early or you're just being too damn stubborn. Well, the thing that's weird is the gold miners. Gold is at, the GLD say is 217. That's the ETF for gold. And they allegedly have the gold somewhere buried. It's actually spot gold. It's not future gold, so it's a legitimate ETF, allegedly. I trust it, but I don't get the inventory. So last time GLD was over like 210, the gold miners were like at 50. And now we're well over 210 and they're at 36. So I don't think the world necessarily trusts the fact that gold's going to stay here. So they're not going after the miners yet. And I get a feeling that maybe one of these days people are going to wake up and say, these miners are pretty cheap considering where gold is. It doesn't look like it's going down, so we're going to have to run the miners up. Or something's happened in the industry, cost of production or something that I'm not privy to, and I'm just wrong. I mean, I don't know which it is, but one of those two has to be right, because there's no way that one can be here and the other can be there if all things are being equal. But we've also seen in the market, somebody doesn't like a stock forever, and all of a sudden they do, and it just races in one day, right? So
yeah.
It's what the... But I didn't. I asked you earlier, and I don't want to necessarily repeat, but I am curious because you are closer to this. What is the relationship between, or is there one between wealth and money supply? In other words, potential. We talked about it with stocks going up, and all of a sudden you have all this potential for margin borrowing. What happens if somebody's house goes from $300,000 to $400,000, and all of a sudden if they want to, they can take a second mortgage out for 100, well, I'd say 100, let's say 50 or 60 without anybody batting an eyelash. We know the risk there, that if you add it to a regular mortgage, now you're really highly levered. Without going into all that, what does that do to your monetary base? What does that do to the Fed's job? Because they're looking at this and our potential borrowings all just went up by like some incredible number, yet it doesn't seem to be showing up yet in the money supply. Do they... If they were doing their job right, should they already be withdrawing money out of the system? Because all of a sudden, all somebody has to do is get that mortgage, second mortgage, and all of a sudden he's got 60 grand in the bank, the money supply has went up 60, right?
Yeah. Well, bank lending leads to an increase in the money supply, right? So if there's more bank lending, there's going to be, you're going to see an increase in the money supply. But, I mean, if right now, there's no way I'm tapping my home equity in Utah. I'm just not going to do it because... If I tap that home equity, my interest rate is going to be a lot higher than it would have been, you know, if I tapped it, you know, 3 or 4 years ago. So I'm gonna leave my mortgage the way it is. I'm not touching it. I'm not gonna refinance at 7%. I'm also gonna not. I'm gonna hope that interest rates come down before I buy another house. I don't know if I want to buy it at 7.5%. You know, honestly. So I think the interest rates being where they're at kind of limit how much people are going to tap into their equity. Now, if the inflation continues, I think people are using their credit card right now. It'd be better to use their home equity than a credit card. But if the inflation continues and there's even more movement toward part-time work, I think what's going to happen is people are going to start tapping that home equity. I think right now people are maximizing their credit cards. People are pulling money out of 401k. I think people will start also tapping that home equity too. So it doesn't look good to me for people at the bottom 50% of the income distribution.
I'm going to say bottom 75.
Yeah. I think times are really tough, and I think that's what investors are seeing. I think investors are seeing that consumers are really squeezed. They know these companies, these big eight companies, aren't going anywhere. And there's this money being printed by the Federal Reserve. The money supply is increasing. Consumer lending is multiplying that. Margin debt is multiplying that. And so they're just betting that, you know, with the consumer being as squeezed as it is, and it's going to probably be squeezed more, they're just betting that, hey, these companies aren't going anywhere. Let's put all this inflated money in these eight or nine companies. And that's why I think you're seeing these massive increases in these companies' equity values.
Now, I think we should maybe have a little study, but everybody's always tempted, you and I, to say the bottom 50-60%. But I honestly think, I talked about a couple weeks ago that I'm going to say the family that has the house in the burbs, that between hubby and wifey, maybe make 200, 250 a year, have the house, the two cars, and the kids are probably, maybe they're going to public school, maybe they're going to private school. I think that on a percentage basis, they're struggling just as much as somebody who's making 60.
Well, my mother-in-law was telling me about a coworker. She retired a few years ago from nursing, but she had this younger coworker, probably 20 years younger, that she worked with. And her husband are, I think, both in medical. Right, they're both in the medical profession. One's a nurse, one's a doctor, I think. Maybe they're both nurses, I don't know. But they're making about $300,000 a year. And they were telling her that they're moving to Georgia.
Yeah.
They live on Long Island. Their property taxes are $36,000 a year. So if you look at the taxes they pay to the state of New York or the counties with the county they live in, you look at their taxes, it's probably 50%. So that they've sold their house, they bought a house for cash in Georgia, and they're moving.
Yeah, right? I guess what I'm saying, I think we're really talking about either the people that are doing exceptionally well are either the full, you know, people who have the stocks, obviously, the right stocks that have run up. You're talking about people of any walk of life that were able to participate, I'm going to say, legally, but maybe not so much morally, on the PPP programs. You know, the restaurant that had its best year ever with carryout and still got $500,000, that kind of thing. Yeah. You know, those people have done very well, and the people who own the right assets have done exceptionally well. But people, even if your salaries have been, like you say, 250, 275. Now, granted, if you're, you know, a member of the 50%, you can say, well, you can sell the nice car and go buy some junk, and you can downgrade like that. But I mean, just in general, you have the two cars, your wife and husband both go to work, you're paying for this, you got the school, if you look at the taxes and all the inflation, there's no way that 250 that they are making now is 330. It's not up 40%, I don't think. It's not up, that'd be 100,000, it'd be up. It's not up to 325 in the last 5 years. There's no way they're keeping even unless they also have a whole bunch of Apple stock or something. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't think anybody is kept even just regular by your job. There has to be some asset that's gone up or something. And how many people do you know have gotten a 45% raise in the last 5 years? I don't, not very many.
I don't think there's very many people out there.
But if your house went up and if your stocks went up and those kinds of things, you're doing fine. Your wealth, the wealth bubble is there. There's no doubt about that.
But the people who are reading the news, reading the teleprompters on the news that look great and have, you know, are very photogenic, I think the people that are reading the news every night, their salaries probably went up 40-50%, I would think.
Well, sure, because they have, yeah.
Yeah. You look at the NBA players. Yeah, I can't. I've gotten to the point where I don't want to watch it anymore. I'm watching the WNBA because those women, they make what I make.
Well, but here's the... But when you watch the NBA players,
yeah.
I suspect you know why they make so much.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, I mean, you look at the TV contracts, and I think those TV contracts are a result of the inflation as well, right? So, I mean, you look. I just can't watch those guys anymore.
Well, but okay, but let's not look at this like we're blue collar schlumps, even though we might be. The NBA contract, where's Lou when I need him, is unique in that it guarantees the players, I think, was it 40% of the gross or 40 something, yeah, of the net?
Yeah,
it wouldn't be the net. So if they were all making half of what they're making, and by the way, I agree with you in terms of how much they're making, it just would go to the owners. You would feel better about that if you didn't know and the owner just had it?
Well, to me, it's just obscene. I don't care if it's going to the owners or the players. It's just an obscene amount of money.
But it's not a game.
Hey, all the better to them. I'm not advocating for, like, caps, you know, government coming in and saying, hey, you can't play an NBA player more than this. I'm not saying that at all. To me, as a consumer, I just find it obscene. And I'd rather watch WNBA players.
But it's not a game. It's not a game. It's the opiate of the people.
Yeah.
People have nothing better to do than sit there and gamble on this stuff.
Yeah, bread and circuses, right?
It's you know, Karl Marx had it wrong. What do you say? Religion was the opiate of the people. We've blown by that.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have people sitting in church anymore. We have people gambling on NBA games.
Yeah, I just can't watch anymore. I don't want to gamble. I have no interest in gambling. And all ESPN does, when you watch ESPN, seems like every other commercial is, hey, gamble your life savings away, right? I just can't watch it anymore.
Well, it's very difficult because it's gonna reach its way down. We already had two players banned for life, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't tell me every time now I see two or three bad calls in a row. Once in a while, if I watch the, you know, I guess I suppose if I still watch the Irish or the Cubs, I'm still a little biased, even though I'm way less biased than I was. You see some bad calls and you go, you know, maybe it's just me being a knucklehead. When you start watching other games and you see two or three bad calls, I immediately think, no, the ref's on a take. I mean, I immediately go, wait a minute, he's got to have money on the game. Or you ask yourself, does he have money on the game? And
refereeing a pro game where you're making like a tiny fraction of what the players are making, it goes back to what Julius Erving told the referee who called traveling on him. He pointed at the fans. He goes, all those fans out there, they didn't come to see you call traveling. They came to see me, right? And so when you're refereeing a game like that, it's really difficult. I mean, I think it's really difficult to call a traveling on LeBron James, for example. You can't call it on him, even though he picks up the ball and he walks five steps on a layup, right? You just can't do it, right? It's just too hard.
There was a rumor, Hal, and then we've got a dish, and I don't know that it's true, okay? But that's the beauty of rumors, right? But a lot of the guys from the trading floor were all over the Bulls in the 90s. I mean, when you saw the Bulls, was it the big long five-night show about Michael Jordan years or the Jordan game or whatever, Jordan rules or whatever it was?
Yeah.
Whenever they showed the commissioner in the stands, the five guys in front of him, I knew from the IBM pit, they had the first row. The traders, in terms of money, ruled this town back in those days. I'm not saying it was right or wrong, but if there were high-priced tickets, traders bought them. High price opera, traders bought them. Although they weren't so much an opera as they were tickets. Well, allegedly, some people on the trading floor were in one of the skyboxes with the commissioner the night Jordan came back. Well, you know, I'm back, his first night. And in the first half, I guess he got like three fouls called on him or something. and it was like one of the highest watch NBA games like ever, Jordan's first game back. And allegedly, the commissioner called down to the referee's office and said, you guys are all fired if he fouls out of this game, or something along those lines. So, I mean, like I said, it became floor, you know, legend. I wasn't there. I don't know. I wouldn't surprise me in the least. The game is entertainment. It's not basketball, right?
Well, you can't put that sixth foul on Michael. You got to put it on the guy at the end of the bench, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you just let him, you know, take a guy's jaw off and, oops, he didn't mean it. But, I mean, you know, he was a little slower when he came back. I mean, you know.
We're at number 45.
Yeah. And so, I mean, but then again, what about, you know, what about football? They said the next week let's talk about that a little bit. The $4.5 billion thing with DirecTV. And how, you know, they essentially act as monopolists. Well, they do.
Yeah.
And they think they have the right to. And most people...
I can't even watch college sports anymore.
Well, it's hard. It's hard. They're professional sports now. Except, yeah. I guess you could watch, you know, lacrosse probably isn't... I mean, I don't like watching lacrosse so much, but you could probably watch that and say it's a real game. Although they're probably getting paid there already.
I'm not calling for any kind of government intervention here. As a consumer, I just can't watch some dude taking plays off, make $100 million a year. I just can't do it.
Well, you come from a different generation. People don't think like that anymore. And I was reading this thing the other day about who was better, Shaq or Wilt. Now,
Wilt.
Well,
okay.
But somebody was saying that, in a lot of ways, they thought Shaq was better. I'm going, well, first of all, Wilt played 48 minutes a game and Shaq played 36. So right out of the gate, one guy's giving you a full game and the other guy's giving you, you know, what, three quarters of a game.
Yeah.
I mean,
but when Young would score too many points, he was accused of being, like, obsessed with scoring.
Yeah.
He turned rebounding assist. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he changed his game.
Well, yeah, he changed his game to be an assist guy to prove he could do that too. But I mean, he was a, you know, Wilt was, I don't know what kind of a guy he was, but Wilt was, he was the top of the gene pool maybe ever in that sport. As great as Michael Jordan was or anything, there's never been another guy like him. I mean, there's never been another Secretariat. Yeah. And Wilt was just bigger, faster, stronger than anybody who's ever played the game.
Yeah.
I mean, to this day. I mean, how many guys today that are great centers can run high hurdlers and a quarter mile in college and high jump? Nobody. I mean, there's nobody like that.
Nobody with that kind of analytical.
No, I mean, it's
Highlights of Jordan, and I'm like, I watched those games, and I watched the games today, and it's four guys. Today's game in the NBA is so horrible. Four guys stand behind the three-point line.
Yeah.
One guy drives and dishes out, and they shoot a three.
Right.
I can't watch it.
No, it's horrible. Yeah. SP Futures up 11, NASDAQ Futures up 63. Now, stay out of Death Valley. Of course, you're in New York. Do you believe that last week they gave all those warnings, told people that even if you go in there, they can't even get a helicopter to fly in there at 130, and the motorcycle group went through there and the guy died?
Yeah, I mean, the government says, hey, don't climb this mountain, there's an avalanche warning, and the avalanche comes down and takes people out, and then, then they got to go in and save them, right? So,
yeah.
To me, I don't like, I won't jump off a cliff with a bungee cord. I'm not going to jump off a bridge with a bungee cord. I'm not going to go hang out in Death Valley. I'm not going to, I'm going to hang out where I take very little risk, right?
Wait a minute. You're in Brooklyn. What if you're in Chicago? You got all kinds of risk.
Yeah, but not where we live in Brooklyn.
100 people got blasted last weekend. All right. Yeah. Take care of yourself. But SP Futures up 11. NASDAQ Futures up 64. Hal, we have a Lou's out of town for a couple of weeks. Might need you a little bit on a Thursday. I'll let you know.
Okay, cool.
All right, bud. Take care.
Bye.
Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.